Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Lauren Stewart. And we have a couple of guests coming up. In just a few minutes, we're going to have Ellie Ewalt on, who's author of Chase Away Cancer. So it's kind of a theme of God acting in our lives today. We just got done with our first hour of the program, Miracle Monday, and we have a couple of guests who I think these would qualify, Lauren, as miracles as well. We have in studio with us, we're honored to have Elena Hagemeyer. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Vitagliano is my last name. People massacre it all the time, but I got yours right.
That's what we call him.
Got it right off the bat. Well, American Family Radio, Elena, has, I don't know, over the last couple of years at least, we've worked with Operation Christmas Child. Mm-hmm. And most people who attend a church that participate in it, you know, think about shoeboxes for kids. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, that's probably the way most people think about Operation Christmas Child. But you have just a fascinating testimony about how God reached you when you were 8 years old. You and your sister were living in the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead and tell our listeners your story.
Well, I grew up in a small little town called Pskov in a former Soviet Union with a little sister, Yulia. And our house was broken from inside out, I mean, mentally and physically. We had a lot of broken windows, you know, and it was very cold. I mean, you know, Soviet Union, sure. It's very cold. But it was really cold, and we were just very poor. My parents, they went off to work, but they didn't get paid with money. They got paid with alcohol. Oh. You know, so they never brought any food or anything back, you know, no money, nothing back to the house. So me being the oldest, I had to take care of my sister and myself when my parents were not home. And so throughout the day, we would actually, you know, look for food and would come out hands empty, you know, nothing in our house, nothing else. So we actually would go outside and we would see what we could find in the nature. And so there would be days when we were just so hungry that we just needed something in our stomachs that we would actually climb trees and we would eat the leaves off of the trees just to have, you know, something in our stomachs.
Bless your precious heart.
Yeah. And we did have apple trees in the back of our house. I don't know how they got there. I totally believe that God was just like, you know, apple trees, and mm-hmm. there yeah. they were. Because without these apple trees and whatever else God provided in the nature, me and my sister would have starved to death, and we wouldn't be here today. But when my parents came home and getting paid with alcohol, my dad would come home drunk, and when he became drunk, he became very abusive. Very mean and all that stuff. And so when I was about 8, we were put into our first orphanage, I'm sorry. And being in that orphanage was like safe haven for me. I mean, they provided meals, they provided school, you know, and there was someone there 24/7 just to take care of us. And so that was really cool. And we stayed at that orphanage for 2 years, and then we were moved to our second orphanage. And in the second orphanage, again, school, you know, food, caregivers and stuff like that. But there wasn't one-on-one relationship. There wasn't really any love, you know, that we felt. There wasn't any hope. I mean, when you turn 18 at the orphanage, you get kicked out.
Right.
And usually you try to do as best as you can, but with the education of, you know, an orphan education, mm-hmm. you didn't have any future really hope, yeah. you know. And usually girls turn to prostitution. And that was my future. That was my sister's. You know, we didn't have anything to look forward to. And so that's when God provided us a shoebox. And these shoeboxes, I mean, that was the first time I received a gift before. You know, we've never, like, we didn't celebrate birthdays. You know, we never got a gift.
You had never received a gift from anybody.
Never, never. I mean, not from my parents, not from my friends, like, never. So this gift was very special to me personally, just because this gift was super bright. I mean, it had wrapping paper around it, and it was just bright and colorful, and I loved it. And I even loved it even more when I got to open this shoebox. And this shoebox was filled with color pink. Any shade of pink you can think of, that was my shoebox. And the cool thing about these shoeboxes is the fact that God knows exactly where these shoeboxes are going to. He knows exactly the person that this box is going to. Because I didn't know I liked pink until God provided me a shoebox with pink color, you know. And I loved every item in that shoebox. I mean, toothpaste, toothbrush. I had a really cool pan, and it was pink. I had a teddy bear. I loved it. But the thing that touched my heart was the little booklet that's called The Greatest Gift of All. Mm-hmm. And it tells the story of Jesus and how he came and died for our sins.
And you had never heard about Jesus up to that point.
No. And so when I read that story, it was telling me, like, a creator of everything came down and died for my sins because he loved me. You know, by that time I felt so unwanted and unloved that I was like, there's no way this is true. Like, this has to be a fairy tale. And I read many fairy tales, being in an orphanage, you know, just to get away from the reality that I was living. But I was hoping that at least this would be a true story. And so even though I thought it was a fairy tale, I still needed something to hold on to. And so I started praying to Jesus for a family, and not only a family, but a family that wanted my sister and I together. And he provided. I mean, he's amazing. And so in 2004, my sister and I got adopted. And, I mean, we've been packing shoeboxes with my family now, and I got the chance to go and deliver shoeboxes in Uganda in 2011. So, like, I got to not just experience having shoebox, but also giving a shoebox, you know, and it's been fantastic. And these shoeboxes aren't just about the little toys that are in there, which, you know, kids love. I mean, everyone loves a gift. But it's more about the love and the hope that these kids feel when they receive the shoebox, because until that point, I've never felt like I was loved. I never felt like I was worth anything. But this shoebox showed me that, hey, there's someone out there that thinks that I am worth at least a couple minutes just to pack a shoebox for me.
Mm. And through that knowledge of the Lord, and that you could pray, and this was truth, this was reality, he was real, you started praying for about a family. Mm-hmm. And then you were adopted. And I think we tend to forget that those shoeboxes are life-changing. Mm-hmm. And I've been to the packing center several times, and, you know, how they're prayed over. And like you said, how exactly what that child needs shows up in that. But sometimes, like, a coat will show up in one, Franklin Graham.
Or a pair of sneakers. I mean, it's just extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. I mean, it's magical. It's miraculous.
Yeah.
And, wow, I've never heard of someone that had no food. Their parents were paid with alcohol, and they had to just scrimp and save and eat, you know, leaves off the trees.
Mm-hmm.
What a miracle you are. The Lord
just
has his hand on you.
Well, so we just have a couple minutes left with you. We're talking with Elena Hagemeyer, who's here representing Operation Christmas Child, which we'll be doing American Family Radio. Our listening audience and family will be participating in that as the fall progresses. But Elena, before we let you go, let me just ask you. So you got adopted, you said in 2004, was it? Okay, so how did you wind up in the United States? Was it an American family that adopted you? Or
it was. Actually, when I was in Russia, I got to, well, my sister and I were picked out of our orphanage, out of like 200 kids, got picked to come to America for a camp for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And there was only 8 of us, and my sister and I were 2 of those 8 kids. And we were always at this church that was hosting us. And that's where I actually met my parents-to-be and my brothers-to-be, you know. And I didn't even know that until God put that feeling on my dad's heart that, hey, you know, this is going to be your finished picture of you, your kids, and these two little girls together. And so that kind of how it all happened.
How old were you all when you were adopted, you and your sister?
My sister and I, well, I was 12. My sister was 10. In 2004, so
and how awesome you got to stay together.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, God. Has
yeah, because
that's
not. I don't want to say it's rare because I don't know the statistics, but to have someone adopt both.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You could have been
and being
one
older.
Could have stayed in the orphanage. One could have been adopted by somebody else, but you and your sister got adopted into the same family.
Right.
Boy, that's extraordinary. Yeah. So, do you go around telling your story, or
yes?
Okay.
Yeah, I've been doing this with Operation Christmas Child since like 2012.
Okay.
Every season I get to go to different states and share my story and just hope that my story will encourage people to pack more shoeboxes because, you know, people might not think a 12 box of items in a shoebox doesn't make a difference. But for me and my sister, I mean, that made a 360 degree kind of a change.
Changed your
life.
Know?
Because I could have been on streets selling my body to try to make money. Instead, God used that shoebox and changed my life forever.
God.
You know, it's hard for us, you know, frankly, in America. And I don't America bash. I mean, we obviously have a lot a lot of blessings in this country. But it is hard, I think, a lot of times for Americans to understand that there are people in other parts of the world who have never gotten a present.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's so common here if you get presents for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my wife and I, we have two grandkids, and we, you know, you it's the heart that wants to give, but it's hard for us to realize sometimes that there are people like you and your sister, Elena, who just had to get food off an apple tree or were eating leaves, had never gotten a gift, and the impact that getting a gift through Operation Christmas Child can be 360 life-changing. So
well, and I encourage all of you to make this a family project, because they take it very seriously. All of them are sent to these facilities. We go through them. You know, they make sure that every one of them is how it should be, nothing perishable's in it. So if you're like, I'm afraid to prepare it, don't be worried about it, because they have a check and balance system. They even have a shoebox hospital that if some of the boxes get just torn up to pieces, they rebuild them. And when I was packing the boxes, I'd always pack extra stuff in there. I think I had more than 12 things in my box.
Somebody needed it.
Somebody needed that. That's exactly right. Yeah. Thank you for your story.
Absolutely. Elena Hagmeyer has been our guest. She's with Operation Christmas Child. Elena, thank you so much for being with us here on the program.
Thank you for having me.
All right. What a great story. And a great encouragement, Lauren, for people who... you know, this is kind of Miracle Monday. You know, God put his finger down for, you know, to touch the lives of these two young ladies when they were little and in an abusive situation, suffering deprivation. And it's an extraordinary story of how God knows exactly where we're at, you know, how many hairs on our head, all those kinds of things. God knows that.
Well, and I think we forget too, in those shoeboxes, they do tell the story of Christ, and that where these boxes are going, most of these children have never heard about Jesus.
Right.
Like she said, they'd never heard, and she's like, is this a fairy tale? But because she read that one little pamphlet about Jesus, that encouraged her to pray. And, you know, then she was adopted, and now she's sitting across from us, this wonderful life she's living, and it's a miracle she's alive at all.
Right, that's right. Well, we're going to continue with our story of how God works in people's lives. That seems to be the theme of our program today. As we finish off today's issues, we want to welcome to the program Ellie Ewalt. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She's author of the book Chase Away Cancer, A Powerful True Story of Finding Light in a Dark Diagnosis. Ellie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
And did I pronounce your last name right, Ewalt?
You did it perfectly, absolutely perfectly.
Good. That's going to get. I'm going to have a great day now, knowing that, because I hate messing up people's names. We had a Hagemeyer on just a few minutes ago. Now we have Ewalt, and I got both of them spot on.
There are all those consonants at the end of it. I completely understand. Ellie,
did people
a couple years to get it right too?
Yeah.
Did they tease you and call you Ellie Ewalt?
Oh, yeah, we get that all the time.
I thought
and
you did.
Having, you know, three of my four kids being boys and adoring Star Wars as they do, they think it's the greatest
They're
thing
proud.
Ever.
They're
so,
proud.
To date, though, all of our bills still find us, so at least some people are, you know.
They're spelling your name right. Well, listen, you have a fantastic story. I don't know if you knew this, but our first hour on this Monday was, we call it Miracle Monday. People call in with their testimonies about how God has worked in their lives. Chase Away Cancer. Give us the thumbnail version, and then we can dig a little deeper.
Oh, what a thumbnail. I am a mother of four children. There are four children born in 5 years, so you could kind of say that insanity comes second nature to us. And when our fourth child was born, he was only about 6 or 7 months old, and his older brother, Chase, at 2 years of age, started exhibiting some interesting symptoms, and we weren't getting any answers. And several weeks in, he finally had a seizure, and they came back into the room in the local ER after doing a CT scan, and we heard the words, "There's a large mass."
Mm.
And that was a life-changing moment for us that led to more treatment, you know, than I could possibly sketch in a thumbnail. As Chase was diagnosed with an aggressive malignant brain and spine cancer, he had a 6-centimeter tumor pressing one hemisphere of his brain into the other, and cancer cells all over his brain and down his spine. He was given less than a 20% chance of life, and that at the time he was given that, they didn't expect him to last even 6 months.
So as of
July 31st, that was 4 years ago.
So that's why your first blog post after the diagnosis, you titled it "When a Seizure is a Blessing," because that's...
Oh, yes, that's exactly why. Because as we watched the symptoms unfold, they weren't really coming together, and it had the feeling for us as parents a little bit of like that, like a bad dream where you're screaming and no one hears you, where you're going, something's not right here, but, you know, well, oh, maybe he's vomiting because it's the flu, or he's a 2.5-year-old forgetting words, make sure he gets a speech therapy consult. These kind of things unfolding. So in some ways, getting the answer, as devastating as it was, there was a moment of relief in there where we went, we're not crazy. Something wasn't right.
Right.
Ellie, how do you deal, though, with finding light in a dark diagnosis? Because we had Miracle Monday this morning, and we hear people saying, you know, I had lost loved ones. I had dealt with illnesses. I had dealt with things I didn't feel like were fair. I had prayed about it. I didn't get the answer that I wanted, and I'm frustrated with the Lord. I mean, how do we find the Lord in these times? How do you find the Lord when you find out your little boy has this virulent cancer? How do you find light in that darkness? Because even as Christians, that ain't easy to do.
Oh, amen. That's such a great question. And I think that sometimes, some days it'll be visible. Like, you know, you have a bad day and you see something going well and you go, oh, okay, there it is right there. There's the blessing. I think a lot of times in these moments where there's a season or a sustained long time where there is no answer or there is no respite or anything else like that, the light is going to be, or this is where I find comfort. Revelation 21, that we are his people and he is our God, and that one day every tear will be wiped away. There will be no more pain, no more suffering, nothing like that. Some days that's the only place I find light, because the suffering isn't necessarily being alleviated now. We prayed for healing, and Chase is still with us, which is a wonderful blessing and a challenge. But he wasn't healed. That wasn't the way God chose to be most glorified in Chase's lives or the lives of our family. And so I really think that sometimes finding light looks like just being willing to be on the floor, wrestle with God if you need to. I've had such inspiration from David in the Psalms. And just to say, you are God, and I am not. Help me to submit to that.
So you prayed, and Chase, your little boy, was not miraculously healed. So now you guys have to decide to go through the treatment protocol, right? So how hard was that? And, you know, kind of share how, from not only a parent's standpoint, but from a Christian's standpoint, you know, how was that to go through that? I guess what I'm saying is, was there disappointment that you weren't one of those that got a miracle? You guys have to go through the rigorous ordeal of treatments.
Oh, that's well put. And rigorous is a very good word, and it's an excellent question, as September is actually Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, and a lot of us work hard during that month particularly to help raise awareness and work on better treatments for our children, because Chase went through about 16 months of 10 different chemotherapies, sometimes as many as 5 in a single admission, and he had radiation and multiple surgeries, and he stopped eating. So my husband and I learned how to attach a bag of nutrients, like an IV bag, to him every day. So I wouldn't recommend it, you know, for anyone, but oh my goodness gracious! And I went and lost my train of thought on that.
That
so
happens
sorry.
To
Remind
us all
me where
the
I
time.
Was going with that, see, well, guys, I'm sorry. It's Monday. I
that's
need more
right.
coffee.
Well, we were just my question is, how hard was it to as a parent, but also as a Christian parent, to think, well, my son has not gotten the healing that we prayed for. We've got to go through these treatments. kind of describe what that was like for the family. You started doing that in terms of attaching the bag of nutrients, but
thank you. And then I got sidetracked thinking about bags of nutrients. Thank you for putting me back.
That's a lot to think about.
Well, it's almost lunchtime. I'm going to get myself a bag of nutrients here.
Yeah, I know. It's sounding pretty good at this point. I could use some brain food, but I think that the way that we learned to deal with it was just, we started the night of Chase's surgery. We were in the ICU with our pastor, and we looked at him and said, how on earth are we going to survive? How are we going to do this? We don't even know what happens tomorrow, let alone, you know, if we choose this treatment, all we know is that it's going to be ridiculously hard, and that you'll walk into the answers as you find them. There's nothing in front of you except hard times. And he said, here's what you're going to do. You go moment by moment by the grace of God, and mm-hmm. that's all you can do. There is no tomorrow or next week or 6 weeks from now. It's just the moment by moment grace, and you'll be given that grace like breath in the moment you need it. And, you know, so Chase cries, and all you need to do is pick him up. Or the doctor walks through the door, and all you need to do is answer the questions or talk to him in that minute. And so that's both as a parent and as a believer, learning to live in moment-by-moment grace, and I think has been probably one of the biggest keys. And that's actually, I started as a reminder to myself, signing off anytime I was writing updates about Chase or anything else, I started signing off every blog post, every letter with the phrase moment-by-moment as a reminder that this is how I live and how I breathe. And I think another really important thing in this is authenticity. I think sometimes it's easy to want to give that perfect look on the outside, like Jesus saved me, and so now everything is sunshine and rainbows until I go home to heaven. Mm-hmm, yay. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, but that's not what it is. And James 1 even promises us, you know, the trials are going to work on us until we're perfect and complete and lacking in nothing. And so I, the one thing I think beyond moment by moment that I learned is to not be afraid to struggle, to not be afraid to wrestle, and to be authentic on those days. And, you know, whether it's calling a friend or, you know, my husband and I talking, just saying, I am really struggling. I don't mm-hmm. see Jesus right now. I don't feel this right now. And so where do I go? How do I go to the Word? How do I pray when I don't have words? So I think, and it's the crazy thing is, it's a beautiful thing. I wish it wasn't over the bed of my son, but getting to that point where you go, Jesus, I need you and nothing else, that's an experience not to be traded.
Well, and not living with a sense of dread, you know, with, Lord, yeah. what are you going to ask of me? You know, what, yeah. what are, I never thought this would happen, but this happened, so now what is my life going to hold? Not living mm-hmm. in a state of hesitation and dread and fear and darkness. But like mm-hmm. to say, Father, you've equipped me. You know, mm-hmm. this life is but a vapor, but it's about coming to know you and trusting you. And during these difficult times, when we're clinging to the hem of his garment, that's when we learn to trust him the most, sadly.
Hey, Ellie, we are almost out of time. We're down to about 30 seconds.
Bless your heart.
Well,
thank you for your story.
Tell our listeners in about 15 seconds how Chase is doing.
He is doing great. He's at school today. He said to tell you all he is brave and a survivor, and you can actually follow his story at chaseawaycancer.com or chaseawaycancer on Facebook. We are in both places.
Chase Away Cancer is the name of the book, and our guest has been Ellie Ewalt. Ellie, thank you so much for writing this book and for sharing your story with our listeners.
Thank you,
my
sister.
My joy. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, folks, that's it for Monday here on Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. Lauren, thank you so much for being on with me. All right, it was a great and encouraging day. Mm-hmm. Folks, more great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio. And we'll see you tomorrow for another edition of Today's Issues. Bye for now.